the biggest success, especially with our ambassador program. And you know, here in the spring of 2024, we have about 13,000 organizations recognized as Weathering Nation ambassadors. And it's not the number that for me personally is our greatest achievement. It's the diversity.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Carolina Weather Group. Happy to have you joining us this evening. And we have a special guest. And if you're a longtime listener or follower of the Carolina Weather Group, you probably remember Doug Kildebrand. But for those who may not, Doug works with NOAA, and he specializes in the Weather Ready Nation Ambassador Program and how many facets of the community can get involved in this program and really make their city, their town, their county weather ready for any kind of a severe weather. So Doug, appreciate you so much for jumping on. I know we have some new things to talk about, but for those who may not be too familiar with us, kind of give us the short bio of who you are.
Sure. Well, I'm a 22-year veteran of the National Weather Service. I got my master's in meteorology at NC State. Go Wolfpack in the coming tournament. And, you know, it's gone by quickly. I mean, holy moly, I'm already taking retirement classes. But, you know, everything's fast and furious still. And Weather Ready Nation's now entered its second decade. And Scotty, I looked it up in our database. Carolina Weather Group became an ambassador, a Weather Ready Nation ambassador, March 19th, 2017. So,
wow. So
we need like candles or something.
I know. Like, as of this recording, we're recording on March 20th. So we just surpassed, let's see, quick math here, 7 years?
Is that right? 7 years.
Yeah. Wow. Kind of tell everyone that may not be familiar with this wonderful program, what is the Weather Ready Nation?
Sure. So the elevator speech is it really came out of the 2011 severe weather outbreaks southeast in April, Joplin, you know, that a month later there. I mean, here we are, you know, 10, 11, 12 years later from these historical events. And it was really a moment in time for the, you know, the National Weather Service's history, where we were really realizing that no matter how good your forecast is, right, we're always striving for better accuracy and more lead time and all of these meteorological sort of measurables. But no matter how good we are at the meteorology, it's all about the outcome, right? And so Weather Ready Nation really became that rallying cry to add in those missing variables, right? You know, so it's the social science, it's the human dimension in all of this. It's getting people to take the correct action at the correct time. You know, there were stories, tragic stories in Tuscaloosa there during the late April, you know, 2011 tornado outbreak, where people went from like brick hardened university buildings back home because they thought, well, the safest place is going to be back home. And they actually lost their lives because they were going from good shelter to poor shelter. So it's things, you know, it's dynamics like that where we're really focused on that societal outcome versus just the meteorological input. So it's communications, it's the social science, it's creating products that are understandable. We've made incredible strides, I think, on products associated with storm surge and communicating storm surge. You know, we've seen, you know, these successes where, you know, major hurricanes are making landfall and there are no storm surge deaths. So that's the crux of Weather Ready Nation. And it's all hazards. It's all time scales from, you know, seconds for tornadoes to, you know, a sort of a train that, you know, is going to derail, like a big flooding event. You know, the larger timescales to even climate timescales of, you know, how can we build more resilient communities, you know, with decades in mind.
And over, I guess, over the 10 plus years that the program's been up and going, it's kind of, you can kind of uniquely tie it together to the rise of social media as well. You really see, you know, social media taking off in the early 2010s, and so it has your program. So what has been some of the reflections on over the past 10 plus years, and maybe how social media is kind of tied into that?
You know, when we were first introduced to the National Weather Service having social media accounts, the sort of justification or the benefit that people always talked about was, oh, we're going to be receiving a lot of information, almost like it's a way to get storm reports, right? And the whole talk was, well, what if, you know, they're, you know, people, you know, making it up, or, you know, posting something from, you know, many years ago, acting like it's just happening. And you still get that kind of thing, those types of things. But what's incredible is how much it's grown, how we rely on it every day, even from just a modest, oh, we're just going to be sort of in listening mode across our forecast area, to now, you know, in some areas, it is the primary way that people communicate, that's on their phones. And it's invaluable across our mission of saving lives and property.
And I feel like it's a way to kind of gear towards the younger populations. You know, they're the ones that are on their phones, you know, unfortunately.
That's right.
You know, you know. But that's a way that a lot of people receive weather information, news in general, and you know, that, unfortunately, fortunately, however you want to look at it, is something that we all have to incorporate, because it's honestly one of the best ways to reach the general public.
It also sheds light on the invaluable partnership across the weather enterprise, the media, the, you know, from the, you know, the big media companies down to the local TV stations, that partnership and working across, you know, the private sector, the public sector, academia. I mean, that's why, you know, sort of the American weather enterprise is the gold standard, is because we rely on each other, and, you know, we all have our roles and responsibilities that we can carry. And so, you know, people will talk about the Weather Service not having an app, but we have a great weather industry to lean on to build apps and build functions within those apps that are pulling our information, right? Our foundational information from the National Weather Service, and then being creative and that ingenuity in the private sector to create these apps and other services that, you know, we're now not having to invest in. We can really focus on what we do best, and they can focus on what they're doing best.
And I know there's been a big push, which I love seeing you guys roll this out every season, these infographics that, you know, either can deal with tornadoes or lightning or even beach hazards, and I think it's just another way to capture the attention of folks to kind of look at these, be like, you know, I need to take that serious.
Right. So, you know, the crux, I think, of this conversation is, you know, whether it's the Weather Service, we pour billions of dollars into observations and our satellites and our models and our forecasters, you know, manning their workstations 24/7 at 122 forecast offices. So there's a tremendous investment on the, you know, what you can call the physical science of meteorology. And I think within the Weather Ready Nation era, we're seeing, yes, it's more modest, but we're seeing this investment in the way we communicate and where that forecast then bridges to action. So an example, you get a tornado warning and you're told, seek shelter immediately. Well, what's shelter? Is it my mobile home, my manufactured home? Is it my car? Or is it driving down the road to the local church or the community center? Or is it, you know, pre-planning with a neighbor who has invested in a underground storm shelter? So it's that dynamic of, let's talk about preparedness, and then let's talk about those protective actions. that really is the difference between a good outcome and a tragic outcome.
One of the big things that I know that we personally participate in here at the Carolina Weather Group, and a lot of folks across the weather atmosphere or the weather sphere, you know, from emergency management to National Weather Service, is Safe Place Selfie Day, which I believe is going to be April 3rd this year.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about behind the idea of, hey, we should do this, and just talk about the success that, I mean, every year I'm just blown away about seeing all these folks in your safe place.
Yeah. So this is my favorite day of the year, right? And it's traditionally that first week in April. And we chose April because it really kind of, you know, the severe season ramps up. And though a lot of it is focused on severe weather, again, we're talking multi-hazards. You can be creative. But the essence of Safe Place Selfie Day is that we want everyone in our country, everybody, to take some time, think about the hazards that, you know, they are most likely to encounter, or even hazards that are possible, you know, maybe, you know, like tsunamis, big events, but it's not like they happen every day. But take a look at what hazards are in your area. And then think about, where do I need to go if there's a threat, right? Your number one preparedness action, number one, is not an emergency kit. It's not a communications plan. It's, where are you when, you know, that threat hits, disaster strikes, and it's really that location where you are that's the difference between life and death, or an injury, or, you know, a very traumatic event versus a very, you know, good outcome, safe, everyone, you know, gets to talk about it. But boy, glad that we were in that location. So take some time, find out where you are, where you need to be, and then take a selfie. Like, who doesn't like to take selfies these days? Again, kind of catering to the younger crowd, but then be creative about this, right? I mean, I love any safe place selfie, but, you know, the proverbial, you know, bathtub shot, you know, okay, that's good if that's your safest place, but you can be creative with the kids, be, you know, people love pets. I think most of our most popular safe place selfies has a cat or a dog in it, and, you know, have fun with it, post it. And then here's the important part, because you can be a hero if you encourage others to do the same. Well, here you go. Now they're safe. They know where to go. And, you know, if it plays out, you may be the reason why their life was saved.
All right, we're going to toss to a break, and we'll have more of our conversation coming up here in just a little bit. But first, let's take a look at this week's sponsor.
Have you ever seen what an indoor environmental assessment looks like in a commercial building or business? During a full assessment, we collect data throughout the building and compare the measurements room to room. We can also collect samples that go to a lab, such as the small cassette shown here, which will be analyzed for types and amounts of mold in the air. We follow up with a physical inspection, looking for moisture sources and using moisture meters to determine if any of your building materials are wet.
Go-ESG.com or 336-373-1538.
Well, Doug, with 10 years of this program under your belt now, I'm sure you've had a lot of successes, and I have a couple in mind that I can think of, but what do you think are some of the big successes you've had over the years in WRN?
So the biggest success that I would say, especially with our ambassador program, and you know, here in the spring of 2024, we have about 13,000 organizations recognized as Weather In Nation ambassadors. And it's not the number that for me personally is our greatest achievement. It's the diversity of organizations. We have Fortune 500 companies. We have, you know, breweries and, you know, wineries. Great success during COVID was a brewery in the Minneapolis area developed a lightning plan for the curbside pickup, because they weren't allowing customers into their brewery. So here's a company, right, that has the, you know, becomes an ambassador and is like, you know what, when there's severe, you know, when there's just thunderstorms outside, we need to have a plan so that we don't have that newspaper clipping of, you know, person picking up their, you know, their case of beer, gets struck by lightning. That type of dynamic is, you know, you're reducing that risk. And you multiply that 13,000 times or, you know, even greater than that, you're starting to make a difference in communities across the country where they're more resilient, they're more prepared. You know, other great successes, you know, our schools, you know, our health communities, you know, a big example of the value of a hospital was in, you know, the Moore, Oklahoma tornado where 2013, where people took shelter in the hospital, but the hospital had a plan. And they went to like code black and they brought people in from outside. They didn't have confusion. They didn't hesitate. They acted. And so we're getting these ambassadors that are getting smarter about weather. They're looking for emergency planning, identifying their safe place. We've done a pilot project recently in Henderson County, Kentucky. And, you know, the emergency management office and the Paducah forecast office, they've been partnering in getting into these big factories. And it all stemmed out of the Mayfield tornado outbreak a few years ago. But they're, you know, they're coming to these companies and learning that they're shuffling their employees into these rooms with like the industrial 6-foot, you know, gas tanks. So you can imagine, you know, that's not the best place to put it. So the experts are coming in, telling them where to go. And we've gotten a lot of great feedback from ambassadors saying, we are so much better prepared for an event to hit. And just like insurance, right? Yes, it's great that they're prepared if that event does happen, but it's the peace of mind that they have with their employees, you know, that's going to ensure their safety if something does happen.
One of the things that sticks out in my head that's been good that's come from the Weather Ready Nation program is the, I'm not sure if you were involved with getting the snow squall warning to become an actual product issued by the National Weather Service or whether you just sort of spread the word about it. But
yep.
I thought that was great work. I'm going to share my screen here to show you, show the viewers what we're talking about here, because snow squalls are not something we typically see very much of in the South. But this is a picture that I took on March 3rd of 2017 when I was still living in Pennsylvania and a snow squall was moving through. And you can see what you actually have going on when a snow squall hits there. You have it snowing so hard, it doesn't usually last very long, 30 minutes, maybe 40, where it's snowing really hard, but it's snowing so hard that you can't even see 100 yards. And that's what you get in this picture right here. So this something that I believe originated with the State College Weather Service office and has kind of spread far and wide since then. And I think that's really great that we have a way to inform people that this kind of thing is about to happen to them and the steps they need to take to be ready for these when they're about to hit.
When you look at life before Weather Ready Nation, and some of it's just, you know, it would have happened regardless. But again, Weather Ready Nation galvanizes these types of things. So in 2011, you know, we weren't really on social media. We didn't have wireless emergency alerts, the WEAs that chirp on your phone. We didn't have snow squall warnings. We didn't have, you know, inundation mapping for storm surge. You know, if you're a homeowner and a hurricane's going to make landfall, you had to go to like 3 different NOAA products and calculate what it means for your location. Now it's all done and you get an inundation map where it's, you know, it's going to be 3 feet of water lapping up against your front door. That's actionable intel that they didn't really have back then. And so all of these things are coming together where I see our second 10 years, our second decade of Weather Ready Nation really surpassing the first 10 years of what we can do, because we can now, you know, drill into the local communities. Who are your most vulnerable? Let's target, you know, the weakest, you know, sort of the most vulnerable links in those communities. Let's get, you know, the social media, the influencers of that area involved. You know, and we're seeing that across the country where, you know, we'll see these big storms, and it's not every case, but we'll see these big events and you're like, wow, you know, and it's almost a double-edged sword where if there aren't, you know, the deaths and the damage and the destruction, it's almost like they blame the sensationalizing of the forecast, right? It's almost like they, you validate the forecast by, you know, the societal impact, and that's not the way to do things. But bright days ahead.
What are your challenges that you're dealing with now, and what you know, what hazards are rearing their ugly heads, and what do you see the Weather Ready Nation project tackling right. next?
If someone asks me, you know, what's the hazard that we haven't, you know, cracked the nut, and that would be flooding, and mostly the flash flooding. People still don't fully appreciate the power of water. They don't think that, you know, if they live far away from a river, that flash flooding is even relevant to them. And time again, whether it's people, you know, eyeballing the flooded road and saying, I can make it, to, you know, tragic stories, you know, coming out of Ian, where, you know, up in New York City, people are living in their basement. There's severe weather going on. They think they're doing the right thing, yet, you know, they have a huge flood event and they lose their lives, or they have this, you know, tragic event that they have to deal with. So it's the flooding. It's also the what we call tornado and flash flooding events. You'll see that in the plains where, you know, just huge amounts of rain along with tornadoes. Well, what do you do? You know, what do you do if you're driving? What do you get out? You know, one of our protective actions is getting into a ditch. People die from avoiding the tornado and getting into the ditch. And hopefully I don't come across as doom and gloom here.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, it's sometimes it's challenging. I guess like the second point, the take home point tonight, is sometimes it's not obvious what you should do. And it, you know, there are complexities. There are, you know, the debate over, you know, if you see it, if you see a tornado, you see the funnel cloud, do you get in your car and go the opposite direction? You know, there could be another storm that you're going into, or you may, you know, get confused and head right for it. Where if you had stayed where you were going to be fine. I mean, there are a lot of complexities and, you know, there are societal issues like traffic and, you know, but what we're really trying to do is stick to the fundamentals, you know, get to your safe place and, you know, keep engaging, because, you know, and I know James Spann does this and others talk about how, you know, you'll get people who don't know the county they're in, or they've moved into an area and aren't familiar with hurricanes. They don't know where to go if they have to evacuate. It's all new to them. You have to assume that you're talking to people who, you know, are starting from zero in learning about all of this.
As we look into the future, is there anything else? What's the next generation of outreach looking like? Like, what is that? What do you envision over the next 10 years?
So we're again, we don't just create something and then, you know, launch it. You got to test, you got to demonstrate value. But we are working. I mentioned Henderson County Office of Emergency Management in Kentucky. We've done a demonstration with them, our Paducah office and headquarters where I sit, and Henderson County. creating a dynamic called Weather Ready Communities, right? So it's sort of the natural evolution of Weather Ready Nation, thinking big, to now drill down into the localities. And what we're trying to do is target organizations that are influential in that community and really are the fabric of that community. You know, hospitals, schools, houses of worship, you know, social services, and then businesses. You know, who are your big employers, and have visits with them and say, what's your emergency plan? You know, my children's own school, I always cringe when I'm picking them up and there's, you know, lightning around and strong winds. It's like, clearly there isn't a plan here. You know, maybe the best thing to do is keep them in the school a little longer. So we go and we talk to schools and we talk to hospitals. So imagine a community where, you know, you have these really influential parts of that community acting as, you know, ambassadors and doing the right things with emergency plans and their safe place and getting information from the weather enterprise. And you multiply that by hundreds and thousands of communities around the country. That's a weather ready nation, right? It's an ideal we'll never get to, but that's where we're going. And so that's where the train's headed. And this weather ready communities concept, you know, could be the big thing in the next 10 years of Weather Ready Nation, of community outreach. We're transforming, you know, the way that Skywarn works. You know, you can text, you can call, you can do, you know, all these ways to communicate reports. You can promote citizen science. You know, Skywarn, people think, you know, it's been around for a long, long time, but that's citizen science. That's crowdsourcing, when crowdsourcing wasn't even a word. So I encourage, you know, users, if you're not a Skywarn spotter, think about becoming one. Be part of the solution. That's where we're going.
Doug, for those folks who may be listening tonight, maybe they own a small business or something along those lines, and they're like, hey, I want to get in on this. How can they do that?
Go to weather.gov. That's our, you know, flagship weather.gov, National Weather Service homepage. You'll see a big WRN logo. Click on that, and that will take you to where you can get safety information. You can learn more about becoming an ambassador. Becoming an ambassador takes maybe 5 or 10 minutes. And it's really that contact information so that we can develop a partnership moving forward. And I got to tell you, you know, yes, it's been 7 years with Carolina Weather Group. And I just want to applaud you for, you know, not only having me, but valuing the safety and the communications aspect of the equation. A lot of, you know, the weather folks out there, companies and individuals, social media influencers, they love weather so much that their focus is on the weather. But boy, wouldn't it be great if more people within our community valued and really took time to share the preparedness, the safety messaging, the protective actions, talking about it. It's, again, just having that dialogue with people is valuable in getting communities, getting our most vulnerable, and keeping everybody safe from hazardous weather.
Yeah, we appreciate it. And we thank you guys for what you do. And for those who are watching tonight, we thank you for being weather aware and tuning in to us and the National Weather Service and getting those important weather information. And like Doug said earlier, passing that on to people who may not be connected as well as you are. So we appreciate that as well. And we thank you for watching or listening to us tonight. As always, you can follow us here on social media. You can also download those podcasts and make sure you make a review and suggest our podcast to maybe the weather lover in your life. And until next time, we'll see you later here on the Carolina.